goal and they break huddle. Akers in the backfield, and the quarterback Stafford is under center. The 15th play of this drive coming up, down by four. Stafford, receivers in tight. He gets the snap. He cocks his arm. He throws a pass. Caught with the leap. Belt high. Far side of the end zone. Touchdown, Cup! The Rams have taken the lead. The Rams have taken the lead. 1:25 to go. Heavily covered. Cup left and trapped the ball against his belt buckle. It's 4th and 1 for the team that trails the Bengals by 3 in Super Bowl 56. P. Ryan off the hip in the shotgun. Burrow will look at it. 3 wide from the 49 of the Rams. 4th and 1. Shotgun snap low. Picks it up. Left tackle block. Here comes Donald. And he spins Burrow around, who then tried to throw it away. The Rams celebrating on the near side. On downs, it goes to L.A. Only one timeout for the Bengals, and that may do it.
They rush forward. Burrow to throw for it. He's hit. He's hit. He's sacked. He throws it away. He flings it away on fourth down. Aaron Donald got there. Donald takes his helmet off in celebration. He flips Burrow to the turf and forces the incompletion on 4th and 1. He signals to his ring finger on his left hand. And you can build that man's statue out SoFi Stadium right now. The greatest of all time on defense does it in the biggest moment of Super Bowl 56.
In the victory formation, Stafford gets the snap and goes to a knee. The benches are going to empty. The clock is ticking. And the Rams are going to win it. The Rams are going to win it. Clock is at 20 seconds. The benches now have emptied and the players are at midfield. With a script right out of Hollywood, the star-studded Los Angeles Rams are a hit. They have won Super Bowl 56 in dramatic come-from-behind fashion. Wow!
The LA Rams win Super Bowl 56, 23-20 is the final, as Matthew Stafford leads the Rams down the field with a big-time drive, 15 plays, 79-yard drive at 1:25 to go, a 4th and 1 play that was outstanding play call by Sean McVay. They couldn't run the ball, so they brought Cooper Kupp in motion. You put the ball in your best player's hands. And to me, that was really the difference last night. At the end of the day, the stars for the Rams came through. Stafford, Kupp, who got the Super Bowl MVP and well-deserved. I've argued that he should be the MVP of the league this year, but that always seems to go to a quarterback. And Aaron Donald. I mean, those three studs, Stafford, Kupp, and Donald, came through. And I know a lot of Chiefs fans are basking in the glory of the Bengals losing because Joe Burrow lost, because they're very sensitive to their own quarterback, Patrick Mahomes, and I get that. But let's be honest. Joe Burrow didn't lose the game last night for the Bengals.
No.
His offensive line was the problem coming in. We knew it all along. In the second half, the Rams front made some changes, went to the overload. It is interesting. The Rams made changes the second half defensively. The Bengals never really adjusted to the overload to get all the pressure on Burrow. And 2 weeks ago, it was the Chiefs not adjusting to what the Bengals were doing. Mm-hmm. And it is funny to me that, to me, the Bengals chiefed last night, if there's a term. The Bengals chiefed last night. Zach Taylor did his best Andy Reid impersonation. They're getting 5 to 6 yards a carry and did not run the ball like they should have. Take what the defense gives you. It's so funny because the Chiefs wouldn't do that, and the Bengals' whole philosophy was they knew the Chiefs wouldn't take what they gave them. Then Zach Taylor doesn't do the same thing when he's got it. Joe Mixon's averaging 5, 6 yards a carry, and then the two biggest carries of the game, one in particular on 3rd and 1, you're running P. Ryan. That was the thing. I was like, why is your backup running back running the ball on 3rd and 1? I was confused. And then he was in there for 4th and 1, and that was the guy he would try to throw it to underhanded because he was getting, you know, thrown to the turf, Burrow. But I thought that was a pretty good point. And, you know, John Kurtz, we've had him on the show many times before. And John put some tweets out there, and he likes to troll people. He loves to troll Iowa State and Nebraska fans. Now Adrian Martinez is a quarterback for the K-State, so now the trolling, as I noticed, has taken a bit of a break. But I thought it was pretty interesting. What was it here? Where's I got to find it. I have it somewhere here. Joe Burrow has officially matched the lose a Super Bowl thanks to your brutal offensive line part of the Patrick Mahomes equation and resume. Now all he needs is MVP, Super Bowl MVP, and three conference title games, and he will be just like Patrick Mahomes. So he's taken out one of the parts of the resume, because the last 2 years, the offensive line that was not good has basically cost them a game. The Chiefs, obviously, last year with backup right tackle, left tackle, Mahomes running for his life and did as much as he could. And last night, I thought Joe Burrow did as much as he could, to be quite honest with you. So I don't put the Super Bowl loss on Joe Burrow. It'll count against him in his record. You know, it'll, you know, Chiefs fans will enjoy that, but it also counts against Mahomes when his offensive line was horrendous.
Mm-hmm.
So that's absolutely, honestly factual. Joe Burrow now has a Super Bowl loss thanks to a brutal offensive line, as does Patrick Mahomes. So I'm glad that we could even that area out when we compare the two quarterbacks. And I would argue we should just quit comparing quarterbacks because they're each different. But, you know, watching the game last night, and by the way, Kevin Harlan on the Westwood One call, which you could have heard Super Bowl 56 on the radio on Z96.3 Lake. Kevin does a great job, and the Rams radio network is pretty exciting as well. And we'll jump in that here in a second. Is there any local sports we want to get to?
Yeah, there's some basketball tonight, a couple makeup games.
Because people don't have significant others, and they should. Yeah, we talked about that joke, yeah.
Yeah. St. John's Tipton at Sacred Heart and Republic County at Smith Center, those are both makeup games. And then Thunder Ridge at Hill City was already on the original schedule for tonight as well. So that's the immediate area. And Southeast Saline at Ellenwood tonight in high school hoops also. So. Yeah, for the latest in local sports, you can always check out ncksports.com, and you can find the schedules, scores, standings, everything you want there. Again, ncksports.com.
Yeah, I forgot. Sacred Heart, St. John's Tipton's rescheduled for tonight. I sent an email to the coaches asking for stats and this and that, and they're probably like, well, dude, we got a game on Monday. But I'd forgotten
about
that.
They're playing both Beloit teams at home two nights in a row.
Yeah, they are. St. John's Tipton goes down, well, and then Beloit tomorrow night. Yeah. Absolutely. Let people know our broadcast schedule tomorrow night.
Yeah, it's tomorrow night on Katy Country 94. It is Sylvan Lucas at Osborne. We'll have pregame coverage at 5:50, tip at 6 for the girls. The boys will follow. And then same times on Z96.3 and online video stream at the Beloit Trojan channel at ncksports.com tomorrow night. As we mentioned, it is Beloit at Sacred Heart. So those are the games going on tomorrow night on our stations and on the video stream.
All right. You know, watching this game last night, when Odell Beckham Jr. got hurt, I thought the Rams were toast, to be quite honest with you, because I've watched the Rams play. I watch a lot of NFL football. I don't just watch the Chiefs. I know Chiefs fans just watch the Chiefs most of the time, so they're very blinded by the colors of their team, just like Bronco fans are and, you know, other fans as well. But for this show, I don't just watch Chiefs football, because otherwise that's the only thing I can talk about. I watch the NFL. I watch other games, and I watch the Rams, and I watch the Rams in every single playoff game. I watch the Rams during the regular season. Not every game, but I watch the Rams quite a bit, because a lot of times they would be one of the marquee games because of their stars. And there's a couple things about the Rams. First of all, DeSean Jackson's got to be kicking himself for forcing himself out of L.A. because he could have had a ring. So that worked out well for him. And OBJ goes to the Rams, And the reason they got OBJ is because Robert Woods tore his ACL, DeSean Jackson left, and so the Rams' weapons for Matthew Stafford is one, Cooper Kupp. You need a second weapon. Once they got Odell Beckham Jr., who, once again, I wouldn't have signed if I was the Chiefs, not that he was that interested going to the Chiefs, and I'm okay with the Chiefs not getting OBJ. I saw Cody Tapp, who I think is starting to become, trying to become a national talking head with his tweets about yesterday, if the Chiefs had OBJ, they win the Super Bowl. What? Like, so Mahomes could go backwards and not throw him the ball? I mean, I'm sorry. OBJ would not have made the difference for the Chiefs to win the Super Bowl. You know, Chris Jones tackling the quarterback might have helped. I don't think OBJ plays defense. And, oh, yeah, you know, play calling's kind of part of it. And, oh, yeah, Mahomes didn't throw to wide-open Byron Pringle. Why is he going to throw to an open Odell Beckham Jr.? Okay? So, ridiculous, some of the takes. It's ridiculous. It's like, how do you get your job? But anyway... when he got hurt, I was like, dude, OBJ's come around here the last part of the season in the playoffs as being there. Once he got more familiar with the offense, became a reliable target for Matthew Stafford. And he was having a big first half, touchdown catch, another really nice catch and run. And then he hurt his left knee and he left. And I was like, oh my goodness, what are the Rams going to do? Because they couldn't run the ball last night, which surprised me. They could not run the ball at all. So the Rams lead 13-10 at halftime. And I'm thinking the Rams are going to have a dogfight here because they've got, I don't know how they're going to really score. And then the first play of the second half, the Bengals have a 75-yard touchdown pass to T. Higgins. It was the first or second play. It was early, right off the bat. And Joe Burrow hits T. Higgins for a 17-13 lead. And by the way, T. Higgins got away with an obvious pass interference, offensive pass interference. But we've noticed with Bengal receivers, they can do whatever they want. We saw that when the Chiefs played the Bengals. Who was the referee in Cincinnati? Ron Torbert. Ron Torbert's crew's doing the Super Bowl. I thought all in all, the crew did a good job in just letting them play. I don't think people are tuning in the Super Bowl to watch a whole bunch of hankies being thrown. Do you want to tune in and see a whole bunch of penalties? So be consistent. I thought they were pretty consistent for the most part. But that was a really bad missed call. And by the way, for all you conspiracy theorists out there, and I know there's some on social media, even some right in our backyard in North Central Kansas, this is so convenient for your agenda. So you're going to whine about a couple of penalty flags that are thrown in the final minute that you believe decided the game for the Rams, and you believe the fix is in. Well, if you believe the fix is in, did you watch any of the other part of Super Bowl 56, or did you just jump on the wagon when somebody else said a conspiracy theory the NFL is rigged? Like, use your noggin, all right? And think back to a play that was was super controversial, all right? So if you're going to say that the NFL and the game last night was rigged because of the penalties at the end of the game, then you're kind of silly. And I'm being really nice here because you're really not paying attention. If you believe the fix is in, then and you believe the fix was in for the Rams to win the Super Bowl, then why wasn't there offensive pass interference called when Jalen Ramsey's helmet was twisted and pulled by the receiver for the Bengals, who scored a touchdown to go up 17-13? Listen, if you think this game is fixed, you would have obviously that would have been an easy call for the official to make. Okay?
Yeah.
So if you believe the fix is in, you can. Fine. I'm not going to change your opinion. You know, if you believe that the games are rigged, and I could tell you, yeah, there's possibility games could be rigged. I'm not going to deny the thought of a conspiracy theory. But if your whole argument is just on the last minute of the game, then that means you quit. You didn't watch the other 59 minutes. And that's convenient. You know why it's convenient? Because that's your argument. So whatever bold, you know, holds true to your argument, that's the only thing you're going to consider. But if you actually watch the whole game and can actually be objective and go, because I would believe at the time that the Bengals got that non-call that ended up being an easy touchdown, I believe in some Rams fans might have thought the fix was in. So if both sides think the fix is in, you know what? There was no fix.
Yeah.
Pretty much. So after the Bengals took that 17-13 lead, I thought that was a key part of the game that not a lot of people are talking about. So Stafford, on the very next drive, guy drops the pass, and that was a backup receiver because he had to play it because OBJ's hurt. It was right there in his hands. He drops it, goes in the air, gets intercepted. Bengals have it. They're in field goal range already. And I'm like, dude, if Bengals score a touchdown here, this game's over. Because the Rams, I know, aren't going to be able to score very well without OBJ because that's no second target. So it would have been 24-13. I don't think the Rams come back and win the game. I really, truly don't. The Rams defense got a huge stop, and they forced a field goal. Now it's still a game. It's still just 7. 20-13, 7-point game. The Rams had no running game. People have argued that Sean McVay ran the ball too often. That's funny because everybody yells at Andy Reid and Zach Taylor not running it enough. And then so I don't know what the big cherry, the big dart, the big bullseye you got to hit for how many runs will suffice for people out there. The answer is none. Nobody will be happy with anything anymore. Rams, no running game, 22 carries, 44 yards, but they did have a big carry there that got him a first and goal by Cam Akers. I will hear Sean McVay talk about that. But the Bengals were running the ball very well, and here's the funny thing is they had even more reason to keep running the ball because the Rams have a really great pass rush with just 4. You know what negates a pass rush? Running the ball, screens. The Bengals really didn't do that last night. I was surprised they didn't run a few more screens. But the bottom line is that, you know, we can analyze this game, every play. We can talk about penalties at the end of the game. First of all, the penalty on the hold, I thought that was a hold, but I would agree that there were other plays like that you got away with. So I'm not going to sit here and say that that wasn't a ticky-tacky call on the second goal, I think it was, and they got the first down because of defense holding. The other penalty was completely correct. I mean, that was pass interference on Eli Apple. That's as clear as day. Mm-hmm. And they got that one right. And the helmet-to-helmet was a correct call as well. So those were the 4 flags that were thrown, and people talk about conspiracy theory. 3 of them were absolutely correct, and 1 was maybe ticky-tacky. So you're basically holding your argument about conspiracy theory based on a holding call that allowed a first down and goal. That happens in many, many games. Go watch the Bengals-Chiefs when they played in Cincinnati. The Chiefs had about five calls against them. You know, and people believe in the fix. How about last year in the Super Bowl first half? Every time a Chiefs touched a wide receiver of the Bucs, it was a hold. So the referees didn't let them play last year. The Chiefs would have benefited from these refs last year.
Oh, yeah.
No doubt. So whether you believe the fix is in or not, the bottom line is the Rams won the Super Bowl. Whether you like it or not, the Rams won the Super Bowl. And I'm happy for Matthew Stafford. I'm happy for Cooper Kupp, who I think should have been the MVP of this league. He proved it last night. He proved it in the playoffs. And it's unfortunate the National Football League and all the people that vote for this thing apparently think that only a quarterback can win it. You know, Aaron Rodgers had a really good year. Brady had a really good year. I'm not saying they're not worthy of being MVP caliber, but the fact that only of all the first place votes, Rodgers got 30, I think it was. I don't know how many it was exactly. 39. Brady got like 10 or 13. And Cooper Kupp got one. Nobody else, only one non-quarterback got a first place vote, which is crazy to me because Cooper Kupp had an insane season. So I think it was only appropriate that he got the MVP of the Super Bowl. He can block. He can catch. He makes big plays when you need him. He comes through in crunch time. All you got to do is see what he did against the Buccaneers. Two catches that cost the Buccaneers their season. And last night, he was phenomenal on the final drive when everybody knew that's where they're going to throw the ball, and they still couldn't stop him. Not bad for a short little white guy out of Eastern Washington, third-round pick who tore his ACL a few years ago. Not too shabby at all. Let's hear from Cooper Kupp. This is pretty good, strong stuff. This is a man you can tell that is religious. And he talks about being the MVP of Super Bowl 56.
There was in 2019, we walked off the field that last time after losing to the Patriots. I wasn't able to be a part of that thing. But I don't know what it was. There's just this vision that God revealed to me that we were going to come back. We were going to be a part of a Super Bowl. We were going to win it. And somehow, I was going to walk off the field as the MVP of the game. And I shared that with my wife because I couldn't tell anyone else, obviously, what that was. But from the moment this postseason started, there was just a belief. Every game, it was written already. It was written already, and I just got to play free knowing that, I got to play from victory, not for victory. I got to play in a place where I was validated, not from anything that happened on the field, but because of my worth in God and my Father. And I'm just so incredibly thankful. I just, in that moment you're talking about, I just felt like I was just so undeserving of what that was in that moment, because it was, I mean, the people that I've been able to play with, the people that I've been around, the players that I get to play with, that come into work with every single day, the coaches that I get to work with, to collaborate with, it's just been just the perfect team, the perfect setup. I'm just so thankful for everyone that's been around me. It was, really, I don't know if it still really hasn't hit me.
Yeah, pretty cool. Cooper Kupp won the Most Valuable Player. Sure, that was staged and fixed as well. By the way, if your argument, I saw, I don't know where it was I saw it, but somebody talking about, that's why I watch college sports. You do understand that almost all point-shaving scandals that have happened in sports have happened at the college level. The college level of sports is easier to rig than the pros. You know why?
Because there's athletes that want some money.
Because the athletes at the pro level are making millions of dollars, so you have to have, like, what's the incentive for Patrick Mahomes to throw a game? You're going to have to offer him $1 billion because he has a $500 million contract. So why would he be throwing a game? Because he'd be risking other things. That makes no sense at all. College players, until they had NIL, and even now they have NIL, you don't think they're college players would be like, hey, I'm a good player that can have an impact on a game, and if I can shave some points here and make sure that we only win by 4 instead of 10, which the spread is, all I got to do is say Arizona State men's basketball. There have been point shaving scandals before in college sports. So, you know, when you're talking about rigging sports, actually more of the rigging has happened at the collegiate level when it comes to point shaving, which is rigging a game.
Yeah.
So now we've seen an individual sport. And by the way, individual sports is much easier to rig, like tennis. That's much easier to rig than it is to, you know, get 22 players to agree to rig a game. Oh, well, it only takes one, just the quarterback. Okay. Well, wait a minute. But you said the refs are part of it. Well, it takes more than one person then, doesn't it? The whole crew's got to be in on it. So anyway, if you believe in conspiracy theories, go for it. You know, live your life the way you got to live your life. But then if that's the case and you believe it's rigged, then don't talk about NFL football ever again. Don't talk to me about NFL football ever again. If you think it's a farce and it's a waste of time and you think it's rigged, don't even bother talking to anybody and don't posting anything about NFL football or pro sports on social media ever again. If you know it's rigged, why are you watching it?
Yeah.
All right? Or you really enjoy it even though it's rigged. So, you know, more on that in a moment with the halftime show, which we'll get to. But anyway, getting back to the game, Sean McVay is only 36. He learned some things from losing a Super Bowl a few years back to the Patriots, where his offense only scored 3 points. He is Sean McVay on winning the Super Bowl championship.
You know, I can't say enough about the resilience of this team. Guys stepping up when they had to. And it's going to sound like a broken record, but that's what makes this team great. That's why they're world champs, is our best players stepped up in the most crucial and critical moments. You end up losing some guys. Guys were asked to step up. I just can't say enough about how much I love this group. They played for one another. There's something really powerful about being a part of something bigger than yourself. And you could see that the way that these guys competed. Love these players, love these coaches, and they're world champs.
And, you know, they went and got Matthew Stafford. They traded for him. They traded Jared Goff for Matthew Stafford, an older quarterback, but a guy that you knew had all the talent in the world, just with a bad organization that didn't surround him with the best players. And Matthew Stafford and his wife and his 4 girls all moved to L.A. Sean McVay and Matthew Stafford ran into each other in, Los Cabos on vacation, and then had these meetings just chatting. And next thing you know, they're like, man, this would be a great fit. And the Lions allowed him to be traded because they knew that Stafford, you know, they understood that he deserved a chance at winning a title. And it sure wasn't going to happen in Detroit. And that last drive, that 15-play drive, it was predominantly leaving the ball in the hands of Matthew Stafford.
A lot of trust in him. You wanted to put the game in, you know, one of your best players' hands, you know, the guy that you feel like has led you to where, you know, for us to be able to get into this position, Jordan. Give the Bengals credit. They did a great job. We didn't run the ball very well. You know, not a lot of good situations I put our guys in, but when you had enough representative examples, you're saying, let's not bang our head against the wall again. I did think that a couple of the runs, you know, the 1 second down and 2 that Cam Akers had where he ended up converting and getting us to a 1st and goal from the 8 was big. But really, they did a good job. You know, they're a tough run defense. They've done a great job of just getting timely stops throughout the course of the playoffs. But you put the ball in your best player's hands when it matters the most, and that's what we did with Matthew. And he delivered in a big way, and he's world champ.
Absolutely. And this team's toughness. I mean, you know, you look at the Rams, they had their ups and downs this year.
These guys did it. You know, they're a mentally tough group. I think when you look at the Bengals, give Zach Taylor and that group a lot of credit. I have so much, you know, I love Zach Taylor. He's a close friend of mine. They played the same way that we did. We just found enough. We found a way to make a couple more plays than they did. But, you know, it's such a tribute to that group. Really just appreciative to be a part of it. And these players delivered in a big way.
Ted, the reason I was cheering for the Rams last night was really nothing to do with the Chiefs' loss to the Bengals. It was that I really appreciate Matthew Stafford and what he went through in Detroit, being on a losing organization. He played hurt many times still for that team. He gave everything he got. Then learning about his wife had a brain tumor a few years ago and all the challenges that they had, I really, really was pulling for Matthew Stafford to win a Super Bowl, and he's happy for everyone.
This is just a long time coming for a lot of guys. You know, this is Andrew Whitworth, Aaron Donald, Jalen Ramsey, so many great players, Robert Woods on our team, Cooper, so many guys that I could name that deserve this for the way they go to work every single day, the way they care about each other as teammates and people. Just so happy to get it done for those guys. It feels great. Just so happy to be able to celebrate this with such great teammates and my family, people that mean the most to me, and just so proud of this group. It's a special feeling. You know, that last drive was a special drive, one I'll never forget. Just so many great plays by so many great players, and just so happy to get it done. And I don't know, I'm speechless.
All right, so the last few years, we've had teams that think they're going to repeat. The Chiefs were going to run it back-to-back, right? They were going to run it back. They were going to be a dynasty, and they're going to win 2 in a row, and then they got blitzed by the Buccaneers in the Super Bowl. The Buccaneers then keep most of their key players. They think they're going to win another one with Brady, and they don't even get back to the NFC title game. Let me say something right now. The Rams are not going to go back-to-back. because this team is going to be broken up. And here's why this team's going to be broken up. First of all, Aaron Donald's even hinted at retirement. He's only 30, but he got his ring. And playing defensive tackle is not easy. A lot of wear and tear on your body, of course, with any NFL position for the most part. Andrew Whitworth is going to retire more than likely. He's got nothing to prove now. 40-year-old left tackle who is a Walter Payton Man of the Year. And if you didn't see his speech, it was powerful on Thursday night. I was happy for him, too. OBJ, I don't think, will probably be on this team next year. He'd be a free agent. He can go somewhere else. We'll find out his knee injury, if he tore his ACL or not. Noah, my son, thinks he did. I'm like, I don't know. Just because the guy has a knee injury, could be sprained, could be hyperextended. We don't know for sure. But it didn't look good, so yeah, it could be. And he had tore his ACL in the other one. They've got really no draft picks in the top rounds because they traded everybody away. They're going to pay for the Super Bowl. And here's the thing. This goes back to the comparison that we talked about back in 2015. When the Royals traded for Ben Zobrist and Johnny Cueto, we had people, you know, talking about, well, how can you be critical of those trades? And we weren't critical of the trades. What we said was, and we can go back and play the tape, was that the Royals have to win it all for those trades to be any good. If the Royals end up not winning at all, then it wasn't worth it. I was all for being all in to win a World Series, but it's got to work because you're mortgaging the future to try to win a championship. You're putting all your chips in to win it all. And I'm okay with putting all your chips in to win it all. Just understand there's a price to pay whether you win it or not. There's a price to pay. The key is you want to win it, so it's worth the price to pay. The Royals, it was worth the price to pay. And they paid for it after they won the World Series, but they got the World Series championship trophy, and it was worth every single penny in every trade. It was worth getting Cueto on a rental deal. It was worth getting Ben Zobrist. It was worth trading away young prospects. It was worth all of it because the Royals won it all. The LA Rams, listen, if they don't win the Super Bowl last night, they don't put together that drive at the end of the game, and they don't win the Super Bowl, this team ain't winning it next year. This team's getting older. Their star players are, you know, star players that are getting older. Tons of money. They got problems against the cap. They now, it might help if Aaron Donald retires to help them on that front. But they traded first round picks for top guys that they had, whether it be a Stafford or whether it be a goodness gracious, who was the Jalen Ramsey, Von Miller. They traded draft stock for. I mean, they were all in. It paid off, like the Royals in 2015. But there will be a price to pay. And the Rams, I'm sure, are clearly happy to pay the price because they are hoisting the Lombardi Trophy today. It was worth it.
Oh, it's all worth it when you get that trophy.
Sure.
Like, no matter what it took to get to that point, no matter how you had to do it, whether you did it like an old traditional way and every one of these guys is your guys, you built them up and didn't have to do that and trade away any draft capital or whatever, it was the right way to do it because you got the trophy. If you traded all your guys, traded all your draft picks, traded this, got a bunch of guys that maybe at the tail end that you're just trying to help get you over the hump, it was worth it, right? Like, it doesn't matter how you got there.
Right.
If you're holding that trophy up. Now, if you did things illegal and they're going to take the trophy away from you, then it does matter.
Well, but sure.
And you don't see that much in pro sports, right? And so, you know, however you got there, if you're holding that trophy at the end of the year, it doesn't matter how you got there.
And they are hoisting a trophy. It all worked. You know, Stafford with McVay, I thought, was a great. I saw the week one when Stafford played, and when they played the Bucs and beat them early in the year, I was like, man, this is scary how good they could be with Stafford and McVay working together. And they won it all on their home field. Of course, with every winner comes a loser, and the Bengals had a great year. They did things that really nobody saw them doing. Zach Taylor, former Nebraska Cornhusker quarterback, the head coach of the Bengals. His defense did enough. You know, I'm telling you, the Bengals losing last night reminded me of the Chiefs losing the Bengals from different perspectives. One, not running the ball when they should have. Play calling was questionable, which you can always question. But just like the Chiefs a few weeks ago did enough defensively against the Bengals did enough defensively last night. It was the offensive line that let the Bengals down. And for the Chiefs, it was, you know, the whole offense, including number 15, in the second half against the Bengals. So here's Zach Taylor on the defense and coming up short.
Winning the turnover battle like we did should allow us to win that game. So it was just unfortunate it didn't play out. But I thought our defense played like they have all season, man. They did everything they could to get it done, gave us some good field position. We just couldn't put together enough drives to score points. But really proud of the way that those guys played.
And his message to the team after the tough loss?
Proud of them. It's a special group. Stings right now, but you got to find a way to just really cherish what this group had together. It's a special group. It's rare that you get to coach a team like this. And this team means a lot. I'm proud of the way that they fought. I thought they did a lot for our team, for our organization, and for our city. And they need to be really proud of that.
So the Bengals, we'll see if they can make it back. Super Bowl losers usually don't get back. The Chiefs were close. But usually the teams that lose a Super Bowl just don't recover. And we've seen that with a lot of teams recently. Yeah. Now, the Rams, you know, after a few years, got back, obviously. They lost to the Patriots. Falcons have never recovered from blowing a 28-3 lead. Chiefs, I would say they recovered. They made it the AFC title game and should have been in the Super Bowl, obviously. And I do hear Chiefs fans going, well, we would have won the Super Bowl if we had been in the game. As my son accurately pointed out, the Chiefs should have never been in the AFC title game. Mm-hmm. It's funny how Chiefs fans forget how lucky the Chiefs were somewhat. 13 seconds. You get to do that equation 100 times. You might only one time out of 100, maybe two, get a 48-yard, 49-yard field goal with 13 seconds remaining at your own 25. My oldest makes a good point. Chiefs fans forget it. They just like, well, you know, we should have beat the Bengals, so we should have been Super Bowl, and then we would have beat the Rams because the Rams' offense wasn't that great. And first of all, you can't assume that. It's about matchups. If Aaron Donald keeps getting into Mahomes' face and Mahomes doesn't trust to throw the ball and backpedals a lot like he did against the Bengals, I'm not sitting here saying that the Chiefs beat the Rams. I'm not saying they can, but I'm not saying they will. And, you know, if the Chiefs are running the ball effectively, I can see Andy Reid doing exactly what Zach Taylor did last night. Not running enough when you're having tons of success. How do I know that? Because that's what the Chiefs did against the Bengals 2 weeks ago. So I love when Chiefs fans, and listen, I'm a Chiefs fan, but Chiefs fans, I mean, let's be a little bit objective here. You did not win. You lost to the Bengals. It sucks. It hurts for me to say that. But the Chiefs lost to the Bengals. So you can sit here and go, well, you know, the Bengals, they lost to the Rams. We would have beat the Rams. Oh, the Rams weren't that good. Neither one of these teams was that good. One of the two teams that's not that good just beat you on your home field. Oh, well, we just gave that one away. Well, yeah, you kind of did. But the bottom line is you did. It's not a best out of seven where you can have a bad second half. No. You have one game. You know it going in. You had a home field advantage. There are no excuses. There are no excuses. All right? The Chiefs lost that game. The Bengals hung in there and won the game. They were rewarded by going to the Super Bowl. They lost by three. And here's a question. Chris Jones gets paid a lot of money. Frank Clark gets paid a lot of money. Melvin Ingram is a guy that, man, he's a big difference on the defensive line. And how many sacks did the Chiefs get on Joe Burrow?
One.
The week before, the Titans got nine.
Put it all past me. I forgot.
The Titans got nine the week before. The Chiefs got one measly sack on Joe Burrow. And the Super Bowl, the Rams got seven. So once again, maybe it's not all on Mahomes. Maybe if the Chiefs would have actually taken advantage of how poor that Bengals offensive line is. And maybe Chris Jones can take some notes from the Super Bowl last night. Because Chris Jones has frustrated me for quite some time. And I know Chris Jones is a really, really good player and at times plays great. He does not, in my opinion, have a consistent motor. Aaron Donald does.
Oh, yeah.
Aaron Donald's not 38. He's 30. Chris Jones is 26, 27, somewhere in that range. Chris Jones has the potential to be like Aaron Donald. He's actually taller, probably a little more physical. He has, I think, the tools to be a dominant player in this league every single week. And yet, you'll go 3.5 quarters and hear Chris Jones' name never mentioned unless he jumps offsides. He made two big plays in the Super Bowl batting down balls. He has been in 12 playoff games. He sacked the quarterback zero times. Aaron Donald last night had two sacks in the Super Bowl in one game in the playoffs, Super Bowl. He had multiple pressures and hurries. And, oh, yeah, he made the tackle on third down and one to force the Bengals in the 4th-and-1. And then he's the one that basically sacked Joe Burrow to end the game and the Bengals' chances of a title. Chris Jones, meanwhile, 2 weeks ago, had not one but two chances to wrap up Joe Burrow, did not, and the Bengals won. Now, I'm not going to put all this on Chris Jones, all right? Not put all on Patrick Mahomes, although I think, you know, Mahomes obviously played horrible second half. But in fairness, as my friend said before, why couldn't other people pick up Mahomes? He's picked up the team many times other games, and that is so true. But Chris Jones needs to take some notes here. Does Chris Jones want to be a star and a stud? Or is he happy with just making his big fat contract, which I said was a mistake when the Chiefs gave it to him, and just go ahead and turn on what he thinks is a switch he can turn on from time to time. Because if Chris Jones had the motor Aaron Donald had, the Chiefs would be in the Super Bowl.
Absolutely.
That's my opinion. And I don't think it would. I don't think they would have. Honestly, I think he, if he had the motor he's supposed to have, I think things would have been a little bit easier against the Bills. I watch Chris Jones play. I zoom in on him with my eyes many times.
Mm-hmm.
And I sometimes wonder where the effort is.
Yeah.
And there's times where I see it, and there's times when I don't. And sometimes he gets manhandled by guys that aren't even that good on the offensive line, or at least guys aren't considered to be that good. And the fact that the Chiefs got one sack. Well, think about this. The Bengals gave up 17 sacks in the last three playoff games, and the Chiefs got one.
Yeah.
I mean, that's an indictment. That's why the Chiefs are going to have to cut bait with Frank Clark. They should, after June 1st. They need to I know it sounds crazy, but they should consider trading Chris Jones if there's a great offer out there. I'm not saying they should trade him. I'm saying if there's a great offer, they should consider that. I mean, I think Chris Jones will still be a part of this team. But they got to get more out of Chris Jones. They got to get more out of Chris Jones. And, you know, if Tyrann Mathieu's on this team next year, who's going to be the leader of this team defensively? Chris Jones is a guy that's fun, happy-go-lucky, sometimes gets serious. He jokes around a lot. There's nothing wrong with that. Aaron Donald talks about, and it was yesterday on the pregame show, they said, "What, you're like a super nice dude off the field. What happens on the field?" He goes, "When I put on the pads and the helmet, I turn into, I consider kind of like a superhero. I just turn into a different person." And if Chris Jones could do that, the Chiefs would be so much better defensively.
Oh, yeah.
And so I hope Chris Jones is taking notes, because it could be him dominating a Super Bowl. He has had, once again, zero sacks in 12 playoff games. Yeah. Aaron Donald had two last night in the Super Bowl.
I mean, so the history of sports is filled with guys that have the tools, right?
Yeah.
But if you don't have that extra gear, you don't succeed like Aaron Donald succeeds. You don't succeed like Patrick Mahomes succeeds.
Right.
I mean, life is full of people that have the tools, right? But if you don't have that motor and the next level that you can take yourself to, motivate yourself or have somebody else in your life that's doing that for you, somebody else on your team that's doing that for you,
you won't realize your full potential.
You're not going to realize it. And you're going to be forever remembered as a guy like Chris Jones that mm-hmm. I watch too sometimes, not even paying attention to the rest of the defense just to see what he's going to do.
Mm-hmm.
And a double team comes and he just quits. Like, he doesn't even mm-hmm. want to be part of it.
Yep.
Aaron Donald will get triple and quadruple team and still get to the quarterback.
Yeah.
Like, there's a difference in where you're at in those kind of situations and what kind of motor you have, what kind of motivation you have.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't know if who's given that to Chris Jones, if he needs to find it himself or if he needs somebody like Tyrann Mathieu to help him to get there. You know, there you can get there with help. But
well, he's been there. Mathieu's been there 3 years, and he hadn't gotten to be that.
Yeah, and I'm not just saying Mathieu, but just anybody. Like, somebody else is going to motivate him, and I don't know. But, I mean, sports is filled with that. Like, there's guys that you see it all the time. 4-star recruits end up being mm-hmm. no-star recruits because they can't do anything when they get there.
Absolutely.
And then there's 2-star recruits that end up being 5-star recruits because you didn't value what they had inside. You
mm-hmm.
didn't value the motor that they had.
Right.
You can't measure the intangibles that they had when you do your little things in the combines or the workouts or whatever you're doing. Obviously, people couldn't measure that on Cooper Kupp.
Third round draft pick.
You know, and no stars coming out of high school, you mm-hmm. know. And so you just – it's full of that, but you got to figure out how you can take it to the next level, because if you don't, nobody's going to help you out if you're not putting the effort into it.
Listen, Patrick Mahomes and Josh Allen were 2-star recruits out of high school.
Yeah.
I mean, they're maybe the two best quarterbacks in the league right now. Maybe. Maybe. This crossed my mind last night. So, you know, and it's funny, I don't know, maybe I see things a little bit differently than other people, but everybody's getting riled up a little bit towards the end. Well, man, that missed extra point. That's going to come back. That could bite the Rams. And yeah, it could have. It could have. If the Rams don't score a touchdown, people say, well, you know, they're in field goal range. Had they made that extra point, had they not botched the snap, they would have tied it and sent it in overtime. Mm-hmm. But I'm going to give you a different take on this. And I sent this to a few of my friends, and I put it on Twitter last night. And it's interesting. Let's go back to the Chiefs game, all right? The Bengals-Chiefs a couple weeks ago. The Chiefs are down 24-21. And we know they, you know, gave away points before halftime. We get that. But it was 24-21. You can't change anything that already happened. It's 24-21. Chiefs are down. They go right down to the 5-yard line. They got first down and goal. They got plenty of time. And then we saw Patrick Mahomes refuse to throw the football to guys that were open. because it was like he was scared to throw away 3 points like he did in the first half. Because he didn't want to, he wanted to make sure at worst they go to overtime. They didn't want to lose the game right there. But here's my question. If the Chiefs were down 24-20 2 weeks ago instead of 24-21, don't you think things turn out differently? Here's why I think they do. First of all, play calling is going to be more aggressive because you need a touchdown to win the game, and a field goal does you no good. And I think Mahomes is more aggressive knowing we have to have a touchdown to win the game. So even if he throws a pick, it's like, well, I still got to get a touchdown. We'll never know. But it looked obvious that Mahomes didn't want to give up 3 points again, and he got gun-shy. I know it's weird to say, but I think the Rams actually benefited by the fact that they were down 4 last night. Mm-hmm. And here's why. As a play caller, you know exactly what you need. Now, you may argue, well, wait a minute, you know what you need. You need either a field goal or a touchdown. No, no, no. What I'm saying is there's only one option on the table. I mean, Sean McVay ain't kicking a field goal last night down 4 with a minute 25 to go. It's duh. So he knows as a play caller, field goal means nothing. So I can call my plays in the order I want to score a touchdown. I don't have to worry about, okay, Matt.
Tom, I can actually run the football.
Too. I can run the football, too, which the Chiefs could have done as well.
And they didn't do that.
Right. And Matthew Stafford, Sean McVay can tell Matthew Stafford, okay, if that game last night is 20-17, I'm guessing he's telling Matthew Stafford, who had thrown 2 interceptions already in the game, who had led the league in interceptions, by the way, with 17. I would imagine Sean McVay's telling Matthew Stafford, Matthew Stafford's already thinking about it, all right, it's 20-17, we have second down and goal. All right, if it ain't there, throw it away. Be careful, right?
Yeah.
Third down and goal. I mean, if it's not there, let's not give the game away here because we could still fight in overtime. You don't think Mahomes was getting the same message from the Chiefs?
Oh, sure.
I'm sure he was, or at least he thought it. Whereas last night, to me, I've talked about a lot in sports lately, free mind. Think and play with a free mind. To me, last night, the Rams were able to play freely knowing they need a touchdown, and a field goal was not an option. The Chiefs had 2 options, field goal to tie, touchdown to win. They knew they could, you know, could sit back, and at worst, they were going overtime, which I still think is a mistake because you lose the coin toss, you may never get the ball. So I was one of my criticisms of the Chiefs. And quit worrying about how much time's left. If your defense is getting all the money that they're getting, then you should be able to go score and give them 45 seconds. And if Burrow goes down and scores, that's not on Mahomes and the offense. That's not on Andy Reid. That's on Spagnuolo and his defense and Chris Jones and Frank Clark and all the guys getting paid a lot of money. Instead, the Chiefs are more worried about running down the clock. They're worried about shrinking the game instead of actually going to win the game. And they're worried about not losing in regulation. So they wanted to make sure they got the overtime. And that's a thinking that gets you beat, and it got the Chiefs beat. Simple as that. It got the Chiefs beat. Last night, the Rams are down 4. McVay knows all along we need a touchdown. And it was wide open. They threw the ball almost every time. Cam Akers had a really good run, as we talked about. And they knew they had to score a touchdown. They knew it. So Matthew Stafford had the freedom in his mind to go, if I throw a pick, I throw a pick. But that's the only way we're going to score a touchdown is by throwing the ball because they couldn't run it all night long. So I'm going to have to make a play. I'm going to have to find my guy. And it ended up being Kupp, right?
Yes.
But he didn't have to worry about protecting a possible field goal try. He didn't have to worry about that at all. And Mahomes did. And I still am really irritated and upset with the way the Chiefs handled the end of that game offensively. I'm not happy with the way Mahomes was gun-shy. I'm not happy with the way Andy Reid called the end of that part of that game. I'm not happy with the Chiefs worried about their, it came down, honestly, to not trusting Chris Jones in that defense, apparently, because they were so worried about milking the clock down instead of actually taking a lead and saying, well, our defense will take care of it. Mm. And supposedly, defense was better this year. So I'm still sore about that. But if the Chiefs were down 24-20, I think that's a different scenario. Now, maybe Mahomes throws a pick and the Chiefs lose on a pick in the end zone. That could be. But I'm going to tell you this. They ain't going to run backwards 20 yards and take a sack and kick a 44-yard field goal down 4.
No.
Down 3, it's like, I got to preserve the field goal. Don't you think it's a big difference?
Oh, it's absolutely a big difference.
It was a big difference last night.
It doesn't matter who.
The botched extra point actually might have helped the Rams.
Yeah, it's like, it doesn't matter who, when, where, why. I mean, that's going to – you're changing the way you're going to finish a game no matter what.
Your mentality.
If you're up by – or down by 3 or 4.
Right.
I mean,
it's a whole different mentality.
Yeah. I mean, it is. I mean, I want to go score a touchdown if I'm down by 3. and I can go ahead and take the lead in here. Now, if I'm the Rams, it might be a little bit different.
But you've got a safety net you're not willing to completely get rid of because you've got it there, whereas the Rams didn't last night.
Yeah, and the Rams might be just a hair different because they do trust their defense, I feel like. You know, they trust their front. They trust Aaron Donald to make some plays for them. So I think they might take a little bit more of a – I'm not going to say aggressive, but not quite as safe approach, I might say. But they still have that in their back pocket, and they can use it if they need to. And that changes everything for anybody that's in that situation. I mean, you don't want to give away a chance to win the game if you can actually tie it and send it into overtime. And then you took away any opportunity there to get anything, and that weighs on your mind. But, yeah, when you're down four, it's touchdown or bust here. Like, your season's over if you don't score the touchdown when you're down four, and that's all that you need to know.
Right.
You have to be aggressive at that point because you have to score.
You have to get a touchdown. Whereas the Chiefs didn't have to be aggressive, knowing they had a great kicker, which they had a chip shot field goal. But you're 5 yards away. The Chiefs' aggressiveness I don't know, man. I'm still upset about that. All right, so let's move on so I feel better. How's this for a good day? Van Jefferson wins a Super Bowl, and his wife has a baby. Crazy story. Yeah. He had four catches yesterday, helped win the Super Bowl, and the second-year wide receiver didn't waste any time leaving the stadium as the confetti rained down on the field because he had another big event to attend. Jefferson sprinted through the Rams locker room after winning Super Bowl 56, quickly left to visit the area hospital where his wife, Samaria, was rushed mid-game while going into labor. She was supposed to be due on February 17th while the baby had other ideas. But luckily waited long enough to where he could play the game and then get there. So
that would have worked out that game was at home for Van Jefferson, right?
True. Well, OBJ's significant other supposedly worried about if she'd have a baby yesterday, too. Interesting stuff. All right, let's get into the really good stuff. Ladies and gentlemen, I know you've been waiting for this, for the show. What was the best Super Bowl ad in your opinion? And by the way, to give you some time to think about it, Alan Alda, who, of course, played Hawkeye on MASH, in 1983, didn't he play Hawkeye?
I don't know.
Or was he Pierce?
I can't remember.
Which one was Pierce and which one was Hawkeye?
I didn't watch MASH, so I don't know which character he played. I knew he was in MASH because, you know some of the names.
Him and, what was the other guy's name? Goodness gracious. But let me see if I can find it here. He played Hawkeye. He played Hawkeye Pierce. Okay, yeah.
He played both.
He played Hawkeye Pierce in the TV show MASH. Alan Alda put on Twitter, in 1983, a 30-second Super Bowl ad cost $450,000. The Hawkeye-Houlihan kiss in the MASH finale lasted a bit longer than 30 seconds, so it was called the $450,000 kiss. He says, now it's $6.5 million, and I don't know if I'm up to that much pressure to have a kiss now. I thought it was kind of funny. What was the best Super Bowl ad in your opinion last night, or what were the few that stood out?
Listen, I honestly, the place I was at where I was watching the game, I didn't get a chance to really see a lot of them. Mm-hmm. So I don't know what I mean. I saw people on the screen. I don't really know what they were saying. To be honest, the best Super Bowl commercial, the winning Super Bowl commercial, was Coinbase, without a question. With the QR code going across the screen, their site crashed because so many people were scanning their QR code.
They were.
Oh yeah, it crashed.
Some people criticized that ad. I kept watching it. I kept watching it go on and on forever, and I was like, "What is this for?" Because I thought it was brilliant. As it was going, I thought it was brilliant because people, I guarantee, were mesmerized, but I never thought about trying to scan the code. So they did that, and they did that, and they did that, and they did that, and all of a sudden it shows Coinbase right after it, real quick, like or a second or two.
Yeah.
And I'm thinking, I bet you that kicked butt.
They won. I mean, that ad won for Coinbase. There's no question about it. Mm-hmm. I mean, once their site gets back going again today.
I have a little bit of stock in Coinbase, I'm all for that.
It crashed. Mm-hmm. And I was like, we were all like, we're not going to scan it. We're not in satisfaction of sending $6.5 million. It. But everybody, I had three people in my group were like, did you guys scan that? I'm like, absolutely not.
There are people but
that's, you know, that's, that that was the goal. That's why you have a QR code on your screen so people will scan it.
Right.
And so, hey, wonder what site I'm going to go to when I click on this. But otherwise, nostalgia purposes, like we liked for the halftime show, the Austin Powers commercial was interesting with Dr. Evil.
Yeah, for GM, that was for General Motors electric vehicles.
Yeah, and the electric, but otherwise, I honestly didn't see a lot of them to know exactly what what happened or what was said in them.
Well, I'll tell you a few that I liked. I liked the one later in the, at the end of the game or near the end of the game with Colin Jost. He's married to Scarlett Johansson.
I did actually see that one on YouTube later last night.
That Alexa ad where Alexa reads their minds. I thought that was a very good commercial. I thought it was pretty funny. The Doritos commercial early in the Super Bowl with the sloth. There's an animal watcher. She's on a big limb or whatever and drops her chips out of her bag. And then they, you know, break open. And then these animals eat the – and then the sloth, when she goes back to grab her Doritos, the sloth goes extremely slow. All of a sudden, is able to run right up the tree because they ate the Doritos. I thought that was an interesting one. I thought the NFL commercial, the claymation with Lamar Jackson and Dante Adams and Andy Reid on an inner tube in a pool. Did you notice he was in that with the claymation? I thought that ad was fantastic. They showed how they made that ad earlier in the day on the pregame show. I thought that one was really, really good. It incorporated so many different star players in claymation mode. And then the mom and dad show up and grandma says, football. And it's like when everything is tore up. Thought that was pretty good. That was a really good one. I like I saw Cable Guy with Jim Carrey. I like Jim Carrey. I thought that was funny bringing him back to reenact his role of the Cable Guy for Verizon. I thought, did you see that ad?
I did.
I thought it was good.
It's weird that they did that for the Cable Guy though. Like that was not a good movie for him. Like,
No. It was a creepy. It was wild. Yeah. He was very creepy in that movie.
Yeah.
But people, you know, are aware. I think aware of that movie, and then of course, they're aware of the cable.
You see it, but it was interesting that was the callback for a commercial later, like 20 some years later, 30 years later, whatever it is. But.
Right. Yeah. No doubt. There's other movies he's obviously was better in.
Yeah.
Dumb and Dumber comes right off the top of my head. But I thought that was really clever. The FTX crypto commercial, Larry David. Oh, my God, that was hilarious.
And I didn't see that. So people said that was funny.
That was hilarious. That, like, they went back in time, and the guy presents the guy with a wheel, and he's like, that'll never work. And then they present, the Constitution, allowed people to vote for, you know, people in office, even the stupid people. And they're like, yes, like, no, this will never work. And he went on and on about different things that will never work. Oh, Edison showing him the light bulb. Horrible idea. You know, he goes on all these things that turned out to be awesome, of course. And Larry David is just like, dude, these are bad, wrong, horrible, no. And then at the very end, they show the guy showing the FTX symbol for crypto, which is, I think, an ETF, electronic fund, okay, for crypto. And he's like, trust me, I'm never wrong about these things. That will never work. And I thought that was very clever. That was a really good commercial. I try to get people to call me today and tell me what their favorite commercial was, but apparently nobody had a lot of good commercials that they liked. I liked the Mini-Me one as well. I thought that was pretty good. So those are some of the commercials that we liked in regards to the halftime, or not the halftime, but the Super Bowl last night. What about the halftime show? So halftime show had Dr. Dre, Eminem, Snoop Dogg, Kendrick Lamar, 50 Cent, who looked like 75 Cent or a dollar. He put on some weight, no doubt. And Mary J. Blige. And it was a combination of rap and hip-hop all together in California. Of course, keep that in mind where this was at. This was in California. They're trying to cater to the crowd at the game, but also they're trying to, you know, one thing the NFL's done is they do, I think, have had variety with their performers at the Super Bowl. They have Katy Perry, they have Beyonce, they've had women, they've had men, they've had older acts like The Who. I mean, they've mixed it up a little bit. I saw people inaccurately pointing out, it's the same thing every year. No, it's not. It's the only thing that's same every year is people bitch and complain about the halftime show. That's the only thing that's consistent every year. I put it on social media. I go, so from what I've seen so far on the annual Share My Feelings About a Halftime Show, that, believe it or not, if I don't like, I can turn the channel, or if I'm at a party, believe it or not, I can go to another room or even go outside. Based on everybody's reaction from North Central Kansas and my friends across the state of Kansas, because most of my friends are from Kansas, it was a 50-50 split. Those who grew up with the music loved the show. Those who did not grow up with the music hated it. And next year, if the halftime show is a country artist, many people will hate it. Many people will love it. The goal isn't for everyone to love the show, because that is impossible. The fact that people loved and hated and took the time out of their day to go to Twitter and Instagram and Facebook and comment on how bad or how great the show was means the NFL wins again. Suckers. The NFL wins again. The fact that you care so much about a show that you hate, which cracks me up, you hated the show. Just leave the room. You don't like it. Nobody tied you down to a chair and plucked your eyelids wide open like a clockwork orange, if you watch that movie, and made you sit there with your hands tied, watch a halftime show. Nobody in the world that I'm aware of was forced to do that. You could have went to the bathroom. You could have gone to the kitchen. You could have gone outside. You could have gone for a drive. You could have went and picked your nose. You could have blown your nose. You could have wiped your rear. You could have done all kinds of things. You could have went and got another beer. You could have chugged three beers. You could have went and ate a whole bunch off the line at the party. I mean, you could have done so many different things. You could look at your phone and look up text. You could, heck, shoot, you could go on your phone and look up people complaining about the halftime show been better than watching it yourself. It just cracks me up, people that hate on it. Every single year, people hate on the halftime show. Because you're haters. You're haters. Everybody, every year, no matter who the musical act is, this show sucks. This is horrible. There's no energy. I'm not entertained. Why are the women scantily dressed? Why are the guys doing this? Why? I can't understand the lyrics. What did that song? They played the wrong songs. They had the right artist, but they played the wrong song. Why didn't they play the song that I wanted? Because they don't care what you wanted. They got you to talk. They got you to talk about the show. And it is very clear, very, 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 very clear from social media and everything I saw that people roughly, I would say the cutoff is about my age. I'm 46. I'd say the cutoff is about my age, maybe 50 and below. Anybody 50 and below, man or woman, that posted on social media seemed to love the show. Mm-hmm. And anybody older than 50 hated it with a passion. Now, there were exceptions. The people that were younger than 50 that hated the show were country music fans. Well, do I expect country music fans to like rap and hip-hop? Do I expect rappers and hip-hardest artists to like country? Hell no, I don't. So for people out there going, well, next year we need George Strait and Garth. Well, Garth's a good entertainer, all right? I don't think I need two guys with a guitar standing on top of the stage doing a 20-minute show next year. That's just me. I would love to. I'll pay money to go watch it at Stiefel in Salina. I'll go watch it at Intrust in Wichita. But for the Super Bowl halftime show, I want entertainment. And I'll be honest with you: some country music artists aren't entertaining. They're not. Now some are. Some are. And if you can point out the ones that are, and then I'll be like, okay, yeah, Kenny. You know, I hear Kenny Chesney's entertaining. I don't know if he is. I've never seen him in concert. I have seen other country music acts, and I'll be honest with you, I think they're really good music, but I'm not like getting fired up and pumped up compared to rock and roll, because I mean, you give me, put Kiss out there, give me Motley Crue and Kiss, and I'll be all for the Super Bowl show there too. I'll get fired up and pumped up. You give me alternative music. You bring back Kurt Cobain and Nirvana, and you give me Eddie Vedder, if I can talk. I'm so excited. Eddie Vedder and Pearl Jam. You give me Soundgarden. You give me Stone Temple Pilots. You give me Linkin Park. Problem with some of these bands, their lead singers are dead from drug overdoses. But you give me these. You give me Disturbed. I can get you all kinds of groups that I like. Smashing Pumpkins. That's what I grew up with. I loved alternative music. That's what I want to see. But a lot of people that didn't grow up with that music are going to hate it. And listen, I had roommates that loved hip hop that were in my house I lived in college, and I got to hear the rap and I got to hear the hip hop, and there's stuff that I do like that's hip hop, and there is rap I do like, and I like some of Dr. Dre's stuff, and I like some of Snoop Dogg's stuff, and I like Eminem's stuff. I'm always been a fan of Eminem. I love the movie that he was in with Brittany Murphy. I am a fan of Eminem in regards to his music. I don't know him personally, so don't get into this, well, he stands for this. I don't care. I like his music. And I wanted to see Lose Yourself. That was a song I wanted to perform last night. He performed it. And I was like, rock on. Okay? Now, in the club with 50 Cent, I thought was disappointing because, one, I don't think he is what he once was. And I didn't think that was the greatest of performances of last night. But that doesn't mean I think I hate the show. Mary J. Blige, I thought, was very solid and good. I thought Dr. Dre was good. Snoop Dogg always does a good job. Kendrick Lamar is the one that, for me, I didn't grow up with Kendrick Lamar. Kendrick Lamar, I'm going to sound like old sourpuss and old fuddy-duddy now, because Kendrick Lamar, the show for me, was the worst part. I didn't, I didn't understand a single syllable Kendrick Lamar did last night. So I'm with you, people, when you're sitting here going, oh, Wade, you're making fun of me because I'm older. You're making fun of me because I like country music. Oh, no, 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 hold on. I'm with you on that part. Kendrick Lamar, I don't know what the heck he said. I have no idea. I don't think I caught any syllable that he said that I understood. Now, people out there that love Kendrick Lamar are going, Wade, you old fuddy-duddy, you sourpuss. That's great stuff. I think my oldest son likes Kendrick Lamar. So my point is, we all have our taste. We all have stuff we love. If you're a country music fan, you probably hated that last night. If you're a hip-hop and rap fan, you loved that last night. If you grew up with that music, and I had it when I was high school and college, these guys. Mm-hmm. And it is funny, I saw a PSA. Hey, Snoop Dogg's 50 or whatever, and Dr. Dre's 55, and 50 Cent's 46. And if you really enjoyed the halftime show last night and grew up with those artists, it's time for you to get a colonoscopy. I thought that was a hilarious PSA. Absolutely. I saw, because it's true. And I need to probably do that too. And I've heard very bad things about colonoscopies, but I know they can save your life. So that's something that I got to think about as a 46-year-old man. But it just cracks me up. Like, if you didn't like it, why do you have to go on social media and hate on everything? Like, if you don't like it, then fine. Don't like it. Turn the channel. Why does everybody have to give their opinion on social media? Like, odds are some of the people that hated it didn't even watch the whole thing. Mm-hmm. Some of them can't even tell you one of the acts. And then the next year, I'm telling you, next year, if it's Lady Antebellum and Taylor Swift and Carrie Underwood, along with George Strait, Garth Brooks, and Kenny Chesney, there are going to be a lot of people that they're going to hate it. You know who's going to hate it? People love hip-hop and rap and rock and roll are going to hate it. People that, if there's rock and roll bands, people that love rock and roll are gonna an older rock and roll band. Let's say next year you got a rock and roll. It's the Rolling Stones. Let's say they perform next year. I love the Rolling Stones. People are gonna be like, younger people are like, really? That was the great band you had all those years? These guys look like they're about ready to collapse and die on stage. They're so old. So it doesn't matter who you put up on stage a halftime show. You know, people criticize Katy Perry. I thought Katy Perry's show was really good, and I'm not a big Katy Perry musical fan. I like some of her music. I thought it was a good show. Yeah, I thought Beyonce, who was she with that one year? I thought that was a good show.
Yeah.
J-Lo, I think, was part of it. You know, I like that show.
Yeah.
I'll be honest. I saw The Who. I thought The Who show was kind of boring. Now, people older than me are going to go, oh, quit hating on The Who. That's just my opinion. It doesn't mean it was bad. It just... I don't think I've seen a horrific halftime show yet. I know every year everybody says the one that they just watched was the most horrific. You know, the Prince halftime show back in, what was that, 99 or whatever it was. I don't know what year it was. But that was good. That was really good. A lot of people out there that loved the show said that's the best halftime show ever. My only complaint is it wasn't long enough. And then other people saying that was the worst ever. And dear Lord, give me country music next year. It is completely the whole gamut of emotions and opinions with the halftime show last night. And my biggest argument or my biggest point is this. If you hated it so much, why did you still watch it? You had to have known. First of all, you had to know.
Like you don't know.
You had to know before the show started what you were going to get. And that's what cracks me up. It's like a comedian you go to. Oh, that comedian was so vulgar. That comedian said so many bad words. I was really turned off by that. If you didn't know that comedian used foul language before you went in, then you didn't do your homework and you don't know anything about that comedian that you bought tickets for. That's on you. That's not on the comedian. And by the way, last night, the halftime show, if you didn't know what you were getting before that started, then you didn't do your research. You have no idea about it. And if you hated it at the very beginning, why did you keep on watching it? That's the funny thing I try to tell people. You have choices in this country, ladies and gentlemen. It's the greatest country in the world, according to everybody that lives in this country. And I say that because I don't know what it's like to live in Sweden or Denmark. Maybe it is better. I'm not saying it is, but I do know this. I have the freedom to have a show and say something, right? Mm-hmm. You have the freedom to go online, social media, say whatever you want. But it is okay if you hate something to just flat out turn the channel. If you don't like this show, you have the freedom to change the radio dial. You can do that anytime you want. And the same thing applies to, you know, if you think the Super Bowl is rigged, then why the hell are you still watching it? If you already know it's rigged, you know who's going to win, then quit watching it. Go watch NCIS. I don't care. Watch syndicated Seinfeld. Oh, wait a minute. You hate Seinfeld too. What do you like? You know? But go to something you do like. Life's too short to be mad about everything, isn't it? Because it seems like that's what everybody is. They're always mad about everything. And it just cracks me up. And I honestly thought the show was – I had no problems with the show at all. What about you?
If people follow me on social media, they know I enjoyed it. Like you talked about, you know, those songs were when you were in high school and college. I was
– The California – when they did California, that was awesome. Okay, Tupac, so I love
that.
Yeah,
the only thing that – the only beef I have with the show is the Tupac hologram didn't come out during California Love.
No, you know? No.
I would love to see that.
I love that they did California,
yeah,
is my
and,
point.
And they have to do it with Dre and Snoop in California, L.A. at the Super Bowl. I mean,
I love that.
You have to do that song.
I agree.
If you're there. And they knew that and they did it. And but for me, those were all songs that I played on our college radio station.
Yeah.
Like every single one of those, whether it was a gold in California Love, you know, you still spun them a little bit in your rotation because we were a CHR top 40 type rotation that played a lot of hip hop. And so, you know, that's what it took me right back into the studio at 91.9 The Tick in college, right? And so that was what did it for me. And there was people that are like, I'm not a big fan of Mary J. Blige. I was like, Mary J. Blige was perfect for me too, because I played her songs on the radio when I was in college. And it just kind of took you and transported you back to a time. And that's what these things are trying to do. You know, when you get artists like that, they're appealing to the people that actually know who they are, that listen to their music. And there's going to be times where you didn't listen to that music and you didn't like that music or whatever it is.
Keep in mind where the Super Bowl was last night too.
Yeah, exactly.
LA.
And, you know, West Coast hip hop is where. Yeah, I mean, that's where it was at. And so, you know, for me, I'm a music fan. So my whole life I've been a music fan. Like I don't – right now I listen to mostly country music that's – you know, I consider real country music, whatever, that I'm, when I'm listening to music. But I listen to anything. But if you don't, then you're going to have your opinions. And and I do. I see the meme that goes out every single year, because every year there's a complaint about the halftime show, like you said. And I see the meme go out every year about, if y'all want a real halftime show, call me next year, and it's George Strait. And I'm like, if y'all are sharing that meme, you've not seen George Strait in concert.
Exactly.
I have. It's an opportunity that it was a bucket list item for me.
Right.
I wanted to see it.
Right.
But for y'all that have never seen George Strait in concert, he literally moves from four corners for the whole show and stands with his guitar and sings.
That's not entertaining.
That's what he does. And that's not what the Super Bowl halftime show is going to be. You can get Garth Brooks to do it because he's moving. He's you know, and I've seen some, you know, like a Brad Paisley, Keith Urban type shows.
I still think Garth's the best country music entertainer I've seen.
For entertainment, for that purpose. That's what you're going to go through. And so it's like, no, that people are going to hate George Strait as a halftime show.
Oh, I guarantee you
Even if you're a country music fan.
Yeah.
That's not what you want for a Super Bowl halftime show.
No.
So I'm just saying that because people are a little misguided, and I know what they're trying to say is like, you know, we want a wholesome guy out here that's going to do a halftime show and he sings country music. But it's like, that's not the answer to your problem.
Which, by the way, when people then start throwing stuff out there about, well, that's, you know, that's not really appropriate for people to see or hear or whatever. I'll say, where you been when we trying to clean up the language of 7 o'clock sitcoms? There's the word ASS. There's BITCH. There's son of a you know what. I mean, this is on regular 7 o'clock sitcoms. That's been that way for years. So if you're going to get on your high and almighty pulpit and say, well, you know, there are kids watching this and this is not wholesome entertainment. Well, do you think it's wholesome entertainment when you're watching a comedy? Right, here's another one. Do you think it's wholesome entertainment when you're watching a show and then all of a sudden you have your 8-year-old like I do and here comes an add-on for Viagra? Do you think it's a wholesome show when I'm having my kid and here comes a whole bunch of violence and zombies in a movie trailer that freaks my kid out and all he's trying to do is watch a TV show called Young Sheldon? Do you think that's really good? You know, last night, if you want to talk about wholesome, how about wholesome when we're watching in some of these commercials, there was one that popped up that has, well, it was Seth Rogen and Paul Rudd with Lay's potato chips, where it's, you know, basically zombies or whatever. And I'm like, that's my kid immediately turned his head. He's 8. Now, that wasn't supposed to be anything violent or bad. And I think it's fine. But I'm just, my point is, if you're going to get all into this high and almighty act about wholesomeness for a show, okay, then be consistent and say, okay, you know, because there was a commercial that came on. The first word it said was sex. That was during the Super Bowl. The first word of the ad was sex. Kid you not. And right away, I have three friends of my 8-year-old. So I have four second graders at my house. And they actually are sitting on the couch watching and hear that right off the bat. And I'm like, That's great. I mean, so if you're going to talk about wholesome, then we need to clean up everything. Mm-hmm. If you don't want that risque of a halftime show, and by the way, that wasn't nearly as risque as no. they've had before. No. Not even close to. First of all, you had the whole Janet Jackson ish, you know, which was a split second. But this wasn't even as risque as they've had before in the Super Bowl. So don't get on your high horse and say that that was the most risque halftime show. It wasn't. But if you want to say it needs to be more wholesome and not have as much skin showing and this and that and whatever else and gyrations, all right, I'll listen to that. But let's be consistent. Let's clean it all up.
Mm-hmm.
Let's clean it all up. Let's clean up the commercials. Let's clean it up to where it is wholesome, to where anybody of any age can watch and not have to worry about being offended. But the problem is, in today's society, anything you do is going to offend somebody.
Hey, I mean, yeah, it is. There's no way around that.
Just the way we are.
Yeah.
All right, I'll let you grab him over there real quick. The Chiefs, are they moving on from Eric Bieniemy? This is interesting. 2021 season was the final one for Eric Bieniemy's contract. It's unclear if he'll be back with the team for another run as offensive coordinator next year. Clarity about how things will play out will reportedly be coming soon. It's being reported that Andy Reid's going to meet with Eric Bieniemy and discuss what they'll do or not do and whether they're going to work together again next year or not. Bieniemy's been on Andy Reid's staff since 2013. He spent his first five seasons as the team's running backs coach, the last four seasons as the offensive coordinator. Per the report, Bieniemy could coach in college or take a year off if he does not remain with the Chiefs. If Bieniemy does not return, the Chiefs won't be able to turn to the likeliest in-house replacement because quarterback coach Mike Kafka signed on to become the Giants' offensive coordinator and Brian Daboll was hired as the team's head coach, and he brought in Kafka. So I think what this means, this is me reading between the lines, I think there's a good chance that Eric Bieniemy is not going to be the offensive coordinator next year. But not for the reason you might be thinking. There are people that think Eric Bieniemy's dumb. I've got people that actually have told me that. They think Eric Bieniemy's dumb. And if you think Eric Bieniemy's dumb, then I guess Andy Reid's dumb too. Because why would a head coach have a guy that's dumb run his offense and be on his staff for 9 years? I have a hard time putting that together. So here's the thing. Andy Reid isn't getting rid of Eric Bieniemy because he's suddenly dumb or he has been dumb. There's actually another reason for it. Eric Bieniemy wants to be a head coach in the National Football League. There are some that believe that he needs to get out of the shadow of Andy Reid and Patrick Mahomes, and he needs to go take an offensive coordinator position with another team. Or maybe if he wants to be a head coach, he might have to go to college and be a head coach at the college level, then maybe go back to the pros. So the fact that Eric Bieniemy's contract was allowed to expire doesn't mean the Chiefs don't want him back next year. But what could be happening here is that Bieniemy himself and Andy Reid are talking and going, dude, this stinks. You've been interviewed for 14 jobs. You haven't got an offer. And, you know, and Andy Reid said everything publicly about he doesn't understand it either. But if you want to do what's best for Eric Bieniemy, maybe the best thing for Eric Bieniemy for his own sake, and maybe he's thinking this himself, is I've got to go be an offensive coordinator somewhere else and be successful to prove it isn't just Andy Reid or Patrick Mahomes, and that's why I'm successful. I've got to go somewhere else and establish myself, and if I do great with another offense and another quarterback, then I've got a better chance to get a head coaching job. And or he could take a year off, take a break, and still be considered probably a viable candidate and get probably more interviews, whether it's Rooney Rule only or what, I don't know. But there is some logic behind that, is that Andy Reid and Eric Bieniemy, they may part ways because Bieniemy, it might be best for his career to not be in the shadows of or be questioned as to, well, you know, Andy calls all the plays, Eric doesn't. He could go somewhere else and be the actual offensive coordinator fully and show that he can do it without Travis Kelce, Tyreek Hill, and Patrick Mahomes. I will say other coordinators have had great players and they've ridden on the coattails of those great players and got head coaching jobs besides Eric Bieniemy. But perhaps Bieniemy's got to do something like that, and he's got to say, okay, I love to be back with the Chiefs, but I think for the sake of my chance of being a head coach, I've got to go elsewhere. And Andy Reid, I think, would understand that. And Andy Reid, and who knows, maybe the Chiefs are thinking maybe this is a good time to break away, have a new voice in the locker room as offensive coordinator. That could be too. Matt Nagy is available. He was offensive coordinator with the Chiefs before he went to the Chicago Bears, and Bieniemy was moved up for running backs coach to head coach. Many people speculate Matt Nagy will come back and be the Chiefs offensive coordinator if Eric Bieniemy and the Chiefs don't agree to a new contract. So you can continue to follow that. But when you immediately, and I know what people do, it's very predictable. People can be very predictable. And that is the haters out there will immediately jump out and say, see, told you he's too dumb, or I told you he's not smart enough because The Chiefs have even ran from him. They didn't re-up his contract. And I'm telling you, Eric Bieniemy might be the one that's saying, he might be the one making that decision. I think it's best if I go somewhere else. Andy, I love what you've done for me, but clearly I can't get a head coaching job staying here as a coach on the Chiefs staff under you. So please keep that in mind. When Eric Bieniemy, if he's not the offensive coordinator, if he's not with the Chiefs next year and he goes somewhere else, I think you're really missing the whole point if you think that he's not good enough and the Chiefs got rid of him because they're upset with him. That's not the case at all. College basketball over the weekend, number 8, Kansas, able to get a win, close again against OU.
CB dribbles in now, backs it out, 5 to shoot. Brown behind the back to the rack, right hand runner, good. A magic act by Christian Brown. He's taken over the Sooner stopper alive and well.
Zach Clements came off the bench after a month with a broken toe, hadn't played hardly at all. He came off, gave him great minutes off the bench. Jalen Wilson, 22 points, 9 rebounds. He's been terrific lately. Ochai Agbaji's banged up. Coach Self said after the game, he's a little bit worried about Agbaji's health being banged up so much. And Christian Brown did a nice job in the second half as well, except he missed 3 out of 4 free throws. And KU continues to miss free throws late in games here recently, and that's got to be a concern. It cost him the game against Texas. It almost cost him against Oklahoma on Saturday at Allen Fieldhouse. Bill Self, he knows. His team has to finish better.
Yeah, we were fortunate to win, although we had the game and didn't close again. The ball where they cut the lead from 3-1 at the end, that was a kick ball. I mean, I don't know how that could be missed, but that was a kick ball. And so that cut it to 1, and then we were lucky. I mean, really lucky after that. Jalen makes 1 of 2, and then we actually defended well on the last play to get a stop. But, yeah, we got to be better.
KU back in action. Jayhawks ranked 8th in the country, 20-4, 9-2 in the Big 12. Half-game lead over Baylor for the first place in the Big 12 standings as Baylor throttled Texas 80-63 over the weekend in Waco. Bill Self on Oklahoma State. Cowboys come in 12-12, 5-7 in Big 12 play, but Self has he holds Oklahoma State in high regard.
They're the most athletic team in our league, and we played them the first time, and they were coming off a COVID pause, and we still went 9 minutes without scoring, even though we won the game going away. But we've got to be we got to be better. I certainly think we're capable of that.
So KU hosting Oklahoma State tonight, 7:30 pregame, tip off at 8 on Z96.3 Lake, your home for the Jayhawks, North Central Kansas. K-State, huge win at Iowa State, 75-69 in overtime. Kansas State in this game, they were down by 15. They had down, 13-0 to start the game, came all the way back and won the game in overtime, 75-69, as Marquise Noel with a big three-pointer that really was kind of the final dagger. And if you watch the K-State game, one of the worst possessions you'll ever see in a tie game, whether you're at home or on the road, in this case, K-State was on the road. How in the world? Marquise Noel, when K-State had 2 timeouts, and Bruce Weber is to his right, and apparently Noel waved off Weber not to call a timeout. And so Weber trusted Noel, and that was a mistake. Maybe like Andy Reid trusting Mahomes before the first before halftime 2 weeks ago against the Bengals. So Noel just dribbles the clock forever and down to about 3 seconds and then launches one from the Iowa State logo. Horrific shot. Horrible possession. Never touched anybody else's hands. And he can drive the ball. You got to drive the ball in that instance. You at least got to try to drive it. You got to probably go with 7 or 8 seconds on the clock, drive it, maybe get an offensive rebound, stick back the win on the road. Instead, he got what really was equivalent of coming down and shooting a prayer. So it was brutal. Noel, that was horrific. And it was a brutal possession. But luckily for Bruce Weber and K-State, they're able to bounce back in overtime, and they get the much-needed win. Here is Coach Weber with the talking about the W on the road.
I mean, just the perseverance of our guys, and I just said thank you, guys. Thanks for hanging in there. Thanks for believing. Thanks for fighting and then making big plays. And we even screwed up a couple times at the end of the game. You think you only have one opportunity like that on the road, but we did come back. They take the lead to start the overtime, and then we go on a nice run. Our defense was so much better.
Well, K-State's going to make the NCAA tournament. They probably got to win tonight. They host West Virginia, who's second to last in the standings in the Big 12 at 14-10 overall, 3-8 in the Big 12. And K-State 13-11, 5-7. They're at home. They can't afford to trip up here. Here's Bruce Weber on West Virginia.
Obviously, Coach Huggs gets it. They play hard. The first time I wasn't there, Coach Henderson did a magnificent job with the guys we had. We kept it close. We had a big lead, you know. And but you can't. You got to get ready. We got to go home. We got to have fresh legs because they're going to come at us. And if they got their butts kicked, you know, either they're going to go one way or the other. And knowing his team, usually it's the other.
So Big 12 scores over the weekend. Baylor knocks off Texas 80-63. KU squeaks by Oklahoma 71-69. Oklahoma State rolled West Virginia in Stillwater on Saturday 81-58. So KU's got to be ready to go tonight. We mentioned K-State winning on the road at Iowa State in overtime 75-69. And Texas Tech bounced back with a win over TCU 82-69. Tonight, West Virginia, K-State at 6 p.m. at Bramlage. And then Oklahoma State and KU at 8 o'clock on Z96.3 The Lake. And the Wichita State Shockers, they won over the weekend, beating South Florida 73-69. They'll be at Cincinnati on Thursday. The Shockers now 13-9 overall, 4-6 in the American Athletic Conference. And for all of you folks that were wondering, Alan Alda played the role of Hawkeye Pierce in MASH. Mike Farrell was the actor I was trying to think about. He played B.J. Honeycutt. And then who played Houlihan? Margaret Houlihan was the character's name. Loretta Swit played that role. And Gary Berghoff played Radar. Remember Radar O'Reilly? And then, of course, Jamie Farr was Corporal Maxwell. Harry Morgan was Sherman T. Potter. William Christopher was Father John. Wayne Rogers was Trapper John. So there you go. In case you forgot, the characters of MASH, you have it. And the reason I bring that up is, once again, Alan Alda put on Twitter, in 1983, a 30-second Super Bowl ad cost $450,000 of airtime. The Hawkeye-Houlihan kiss in the finale of MASH that year lasted a bit longer than 30 seconds. It was called the $450,000 kiss. He says, man, I'd have a lot of pressure today because now it would be known as the $6.5 million kiss. Because that 30 seconds of airtime during the Super Bowl, yeah, cost $6.5 million a year and up a million from last year. Last year, it was a paltry $5.5 million for 30 seconds of airtime. This year, $6.5 million. So whether or not you think the Super Bowl was fixed, whether or not you thought the halftime show was horrific, whether or not you thought the ads were good or bad, the bottom line is, and all that the National Football League really cares about, they don't care about whether you like the halftime show. They don't really care if you love the game. They really don't care if you're into conspiracy theories. They really don't care if you liked or loved the radio or the TV ads. All they care about is that you watched, you cared, and you take all the time in the world out of your busy life to comment about all of it. They got you.
State, regional, and national sports talk on your schedule. The Sports Ticket Podcast. Subscribe via Apple, Google, and TuneIn Podcasts or SunflowerStateRadio.com.